Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Dr. Felicia Dawson. Dr. Felicia is the doctor and the CEO of Plant-Based Lifestyle and Ancient Nutritional Treatment Strategies, which is also known as Plants for Life. So she's obviously the CEO of Plants for Life and also former founder and medical director of Women for Women. So thanks for joining us today, Dr. Felicia.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
No, super exciting. Super excited for the discussion and interested because it's, sometimes a controversial topic, but it's something we all need to kind of face and become educated on, right? I think a lot of times controversy comes from dated information, misinformation, stigma, all that kind of fun stuff going on, kind of butting heads with research and science and other things like that going on. So you're going to be bringing a lot of that to the table today. So today we're going to be talking about, obviously, your background and Plants for Life, and talking about, you know, the meaningful research that goes behind the cannabis and CBD in pregnancy and also in women's health in general. So super excited about that. But, you know, as I always say, we'll start it off easy. So let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
I am based in Decatur, Georgia right now, which is adjacent to Atlanta, Georgia. And I am enjoying the sunlight. Just got back from a nice little walk.
Beautiful, beautiful. Definitely. So, you know, it's always important for me to kind of get a feel for, you know, I'm grateful to be able to talk to people all around the country, all around the world. And every person has kind of their own, beliefs and ideas about cannabis, but also their surroundings, right? Have a sort of its own kind of mind and everything like that. So talk to me how it is there, you know, in Atlanta, Georgia these days here towards the end here of 2021, and how people kind of react to what you're doing and cannabis in general.
Well, I live in a technically legal medical cannabis state. However, things are moving quite slowly. Technically, medical cannabis, as in low THC CBD oil, has been legal since 2015. However, no one has manufactured it, or nothing has happened to make it available to the citizens of Georgia. And we finally had a commission appointed a little over a year ago, and they finally selected the companies. However, there's been a lot of controversy about that as well. Apparently, two of the big questionable things in their background, and apparently the law was written for the commission so that they can pretty much do everything in the dark. So we have a little controversy going on in Georgia right now. People have been waiting a long time to get medical cannabis legally. Wow. Right now, people have to go pretty much break the law to find it, bring it into the state, or make it themselves in the state. So we're kind of in a bad shape right now. I mean, a lot of entities don't even consider us a really full-fledged medical cannabis state, because the only thing people will have access to one day is low THC, as in 5% CBD oil. So that's kind of where things are right here in Georgia. I mean, we do have CBD, so thank God for that. People are growing hemp, thank God for that. But we still don't have access to legal medical cannabis products. And that's unfortunate.
Wow. No, that's so sad, especially seeing, you know, since it's a medical state. And as you said, people still have to go out and, you know, break the law, right? Just because it's quote unquote legal, but the restrictions really make it so it's not, right? You know, so, you know, it's a shame, I guess. You know, talk to me about, I mean, is this where you've been for a long time? Is it something where you do out of choice? Like, hey, I'm going to, you know, do what I do here in Georgia, knowing that I'm an advocate and, you know, trying to make it, you know, change the way that things are here in Georgia? Or is just kind of like, this is where you've been and this is where you choose to stay?
Yeah, I've been in Georgia for quite a while. I came here from Illinois by way of Alabama. I went to University of Alabama in Birmingham for my first year of college and visited Atlanta and fell in love with the city and moved here in 79 to finish my college education at Emory University. So I've been here quite a while, and I was in medical practice for a long time. I first was with another physician for about 4 years, and then I started my own practice, Women for Women, in 1994. And I had that practice up until 2016, and delivered lots of babies and took care of lots of women. And however, over the years, there's this thing called the corporatization of medicine that's been occurring. The business of medicine was really starting to weigh me down. And I just really enjoyed taking care of patients and teaching them how to be healthier. But the business of medicine really burned me out pretty much. I was having sleepless nights and all those kind of things. So I just said, this is not working for me. And kind of at the same time, like maybe a couple of years before that, in 2013, Dr. Sanjay Gupta started talking about cannabis with his weed docuseries. And I just really had never heard about cannabis as medicine.
This is 2013?
In 2013. Uh-huh. Yeah. I really hadn't heard that much about cannabis as medicine.
Well, I don't want to get you off, but what were your thoughts on cannabis at that time?
I knew that people used it for cancer, nausea, vomiting, that kind of thing, but I didn't know all of the medicinal properties that it could be used for. I just kind of heard about it peripherally. But as I started hearing Dr. Sanjay Gupta talk about it, I became intrigued and fascinated. And I was blown away that we were literally prescribing cannabis as physicians in this country up until, 1937, we were prescribing it from the mid 1800s to the early 1900s. And that just blew me away. So at the same time that I was getting a little burnt out over the business of medicine, the corporatization of medicine, I started becoming intrigued with cannabis and finding another way to practice medicine. And so I pretty much closed my office in 2016, and I've been focusing on advocating for cannabis, educating our legislators here in Georgia, other physicians, and just the general public about cannabis and its medicinal properties. And I offer my services online now just as educational consultations to help people who are wanting to wean themselves from pharmaceuticals onto medical cannabis or CBD. Also available for any, companies that need, who could use my background in women's health of over 30 years. So that's pretty much what I've been doing of late, and, talking at a few conferences here or there.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, glad to have you on board over here. And, as an advocate, it's always great, when, as you said, right, just kind of peripheral knowledge of cannabis and kind of getting turned on, right? Dr. Sanjay Gupta, that's amazing. And kind of, but being able to kind of release that and being open and bring those 30 years of experience, right, in women's health, and now being able to combine that. So tell me, how do you marry those two, right? Because you're practicing over here on one end, and here it's kind of been, a new endeavor, right? So how do you kind of marry that experience with kind of what you've been doing now? Do you still treat patients? Do you still, or is it just kind of that consultation a little bit? Or talk to me about how you've been able to do that in the last 5 years.
I'm not practicing obstetrics and gynecology per se right now. What I do in terms of hands-on with patients, I do evaluate veterans for disability to help them get their disability claims. And I do, take care of some women occasionally as female veterans come through. Unfortunately, a lot of them, they have some of the regular pains and ailments that male veterans have, but I'm seeing a significant number of female veterans who have been sexually assaulted in the military. Probably 25 to 50% of the women I see have been sexually assaulted. So
what was that number?
I get about 25 to 50% of the physicians, of the female veterans that I come across have been assaulted while they were in the military.
Terrific.
Yeah, very horrific. And it's just always interesting to see the timeline that a lot of their physical ailments began immediately after that assault. Because I'm dual board certified, not only in obstetrics and gynecology, but also in integrative medicine. So I clearly understand the connection between body, mind, and spirit. And I try to bring all of that knowledge as I, you know, talk with individual patients, because I don't look at cannabis as just another substitute for a pharmaceutical. I always try to look at the entire picture of what people are doing, you know, their relationships, what they do for a living, how are they sleeping, what are they eating. So I bring all of that when I do a consultation with a patient, and cannabis or CBD is just part of the picture. I don't want people to look at cannabis is going to take the place of my pharmaceutical and I don't have to change how I eat or I don't have to change how I sleep. I try to look at the whole picture as I've always done with all my patients.
No, that's amazing. I think that's kind of the major key. That's where I've noticed so many times when we brought on, you know, medical doctors on and been able to, you know, speak on the subject. Yes, it's true. They bring a lot of awareness, such as yourself, and a lot of advocacy and a lot of forward thinking and ahead of the game. But it's not like necessarily reinventing the wheel, right? So much has to do with having an overall, it's just one piece of overall wellness, right? Just one pillar, so to speak, of what a person needs to do. And like you said, it's not a substitute for having healthy life, having, you know, sleep and the way you eat and everything else that goes along with it. And yes, of course, you know, in terms of, you know, body chemistry and everything like that, and chronic illness, and for so many plethora of reasons why pharmaceuticals have a place in this world. And it's not just like, you know, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, which I think so many times we want to do, right? People want to be free completely from pharmaceuticals, especially in the industry we hear so much about, you know, just kind of trying to do it away and with all of it and trying to do things naturally. But as you know, you said yourself, right, there's definitely a place in that. So, is it just on case by case basis, right? Having to gauge each person individually, right? And how do you do that? I think so many times, like you said, the corporatization of health has, you know, really made it very difficult for doctors to be able to take that time and being able to focus on the individual and on the patient, as opposed to, you know, trying to get through the day and trying to get out of the room and trying to get on to the next one and looking at it is just another piece of data, right? So how do you kind of do that?
Well, you know, because I also have training in functional medicine, and we're about the patient and their experience and looking at the things that they've been exposed to before the disease started, you know, what may have triggered the disease and what's keeping the disease going. So I look at each patient individually. And I didn't answer completely your question about how do I marry cannabis and women's health. Well, it's actually very easy, because historically cannabis was used for a lot of gynecologic conditions and obstetrical conditions. Women use cannabis for heavy, painful periods, for trouble sleeping, for anxiety. It was used when people had labor that wasn't progressing properly. It was used for pain relief during labor. It was used to stop postpartum hemorrhage. Cannabis has been used extensively historically in women's health. So it's a perfect marriage. It's really easy to do. You know, some of the properties of the plant, you know, being anti-inflammatory, you know, relaxing smooth muscle, helping with depression, anxiety, all these things help with a lot of gynecologic and women's healthcare issues.
Yeah, definitely. I think so much of what we're doing now, right? I mean, almost 100 years of prohibition, so to speak, and stigma, and kind of relearning again what was done before. I mean, so you mentioned, you know, being used during labor and in all these different places, you know, hemorrhaging. When was that? Was that pre-prohibition? Has that been something that doctors were using since then? Or is this just something that, you know, when was this?
As early back as thousands of years.
Yes, no, definitely.
I'm talking about thousands of years. I mean, it's in Asia, Africa, and lots of places for thousands of years, literally, cannabis has been used in women's health. Is not it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just that physicians in this country started getting into it in the middle 1800s, but doctors in India were prescribing cannabis for migraines and opioid addiction already. And over in America, we were still struggling, not having a good remedy for it. And it's like we were rediscovering. And then so when we did bring it over here, we did start using cannabis as to help with opioid addiction, because we recognized opioid addiction long ago and the side effects of constipation, all of that. And we're just kind of rediscovering it, or at least the patients are rediscovering it. The physicians are a little behind on rediscovering all the many ways that cannabis was used. But yeah, it's been used for thousands of years in women's healthcare.
Definitely. Is that something that you see the next generations of doctors taking and, you know, kind of that approach again? Or do you see something that is still very far behind in medical, you know, textbooks and medical schools? It's still not even there. And I mean, do you see this kind of being once again incorporated again, or still not even?
Yeah, but I do. I know it'll be from the younger physicians. I mean, it's just like I see more younger physicians, as well as older physicians who are looking for another way to reignite their excitement about medicine, getting into functional medicine, holistic, integrative medicine. Some old heads like myself and a lot of the younger people are getting into holistic medicine and therefore also cannabis. A lot of the most open-minded physicians about cannabis are coming from the integrative, holistic, functional medicine community. It's not as much as the conventional doctors, but slowly but surely. But I definitely think it's going to get to a point where you're probably still going to have doctors who still just do, you know, pharmaceuticals and surgery. We do have physicians that write recommendations for cannabis. And we have physicians like myself who are actually helping patients come up with the right dosing and right combinations of cannabinoids and terpenes, et cetera. So it's going to be probably all three of these different types of physicians going forward. But yeah, definitely younger physicians are going to be more open to cannabis as medicine, because they don't have that stigma. They didn't grow up with the dare and, you know, drugs fry your brain kind of thing. So it's going to be the young people that save us.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I'm 35, so I grew up with a bunch of that dare stuff, you know, but I know, you know, the younger generation probably didn't get that. Now, you know, so talking about, I mean, obviously migraines, periods, all these kind of things, it makes a lot of sense, right? Obviously, you know, but in terms of during pregnancy, right, or during labor, or any of those are kind of places, I think, right, it still has a lot of stigma. Obviously, it seems like a very controversial topic, you know, and it's right pretty widely accepted, you know, where it used to be, you can smoke and drink during pregnancy. What's the worst that can happen? And now, you know, that's pretty accepted that you don't, right? I mean, where are we there with cannabis? What does the research say on that? And what does Dr. Felicia say on that?
Well, most of the research we have on cannabis and pregnancy is just straight up bad. It's just bad. Mm-hmm. It's bad. It's a lot that goes into it. There's you know, when they in 1937, when Congress helped to outlaw cannabis, it brought it to an abrupt halt, and ever since then, there's been propaganda and just the machinery to keep it illegal. The government, the pharmaceutical industry, conflicting industries that stand to lose if cannabis is free and another commodity that people can easily purchase. It's been a lot of forces going against it. And I'm losing my train of thought. What was the question again?
No, yeah, it was basically, you know, all this prohibition, you mentioned it, right? You know, the propaganda, the stigma, and mm-hmm. how, you know, what does the research say on cannabis and what does Dr. Felicia say on cannabis, right? I mean,
all right. Well, yeah. So the bulk of the research states that if you use cannabis during pregnancy, your babies will have a decreased IQ. They will be small for their age. Their brain will be rewired. You will have complications of pregnancy. All of these things is what the bulk of the research says. But we're finding as new research comes out that's not based on old data. Because see, part of the problem with the research is that we live primarily, or most of the country lives in a prohibition market, or there's still major pockets of prohibition. Even in those states that have legal cannabis or a medical cannabis, there's a certain list of conditions that you can get the recommendation for. And if you have a condition that's not on that law, you can't get a recommendation. So you're already blocking a lot of people with a lot of conditions that could be treated by cannabis. So people are having to get their product from the legacy market or black market that's not regulated, is not tested. And I believe that a lot of the research is based on people using stuff from the black market or legacy market that's been grown in ways that are not beneficial to the patient. They're toxins, solvents, pesticides, mold, mildew, heavy metals, all these kind of things are contaminating a lot of the product that people have used over the years of prohibition. And then when they get involved in research, those toxin effects on their health and being passed on to their baby is what's being measured. It's not the cannabis per se, it's the toxins and contaminants on it. And then add on top of that, a lot of the research is based on smoking cannabis. And whenever you combust or burn a plant material, you're generating over 1,000 toxins like carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, cyanide. And these are the things we're thinking is why most of the research on cannabis and pregnancy has such negative results, because what it's really measuring is the combustion of plant material and the toxins being generated. So you got toxins on the plant being grown in an unregulated market, then you're going to burn it and generate even more toxins. And then you're going to be measuring your research, measuring the results of that. So that's why the bulk of the research is bad on cannabis and pregnancy. Some of the newer research, for example, I just reviewed a study out of Canada, because historically they said the cannabis makes the sperm count low, it causes infertility. And this most recent research out of Canada, who's had a legal market for a while now, there was no difference in people who used cannabis and those who did not use cannabis in terms of their in vitro fertilization rate. So their fertility was no different than people who did not use cannabis. So that's an example of research, new research being done on clean, safe products that gives us good results. And I believe that if the same thing happened with cannabis and pregnancy, we would see that it's not the plant that's causing these results. It's the delivery method, people smoking. And if women would do something like just use electronic vaporizer that does not burn the plant, it raises the heat just enough to release the cannabinoids and terpenes, but you're not generating those toxins. I believe if we could follow women, test their product, and you know, have them take it in ways that are not causing more toxins to be introduced to their body, or either use a tincture or things like that, we would probably see better results. But right now they're saying that it's unethical to do research in pregnant women with cannabis. At the same time, we're testing a COVID vaccine on pregnant women. So, you know, I was at a recent virtual conference with with the director over the National Institutes of Health's National Center for Complementary and Integrative Medicine. And I brought the question to him because I've been shot down by many scientists and physicians that we can't do research in cannabis and pregnancy because it's unethical. And I said, well, you know, so I told this director, it's like, well, how can we test the COVID vaccine in pregnant women? You know, if we can do that, we can test cannabis because we have thousands of years of history with this plant, and pregnant women and women who are not pregnant have been using it with no problems. Why can't we? So for the first time, this director said, well, we need to get all the, you know, stakeholders at the table and decide how we're going to proceed. And that is the first time and only time I've heard someone say, well, maybe we need to look at this, because the reality is we are testing a product in pregnant women right now without having tested it in animals first. And that is very dangerous, in my opinion, because there's such a thing called thalidomide that was tested in women, and it didn't hurt the woman, but their children were born with flippers for arms and legs. You know, we used to give women something called DES. It didn't hurt the women, but it hurt their offspring and their offspring's offspring, causing their offspring to have be at risk for cervical and vaginal cancer. Their male children being infertile, having undescended testes, et cetera. So if we can test the COVID vaccine in pregnant women, we can test cannabis in pregnant women, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, a lot of stuff there, because obviously no longitudinal studies on COVID vaccine. I don't want to go on too much of a tangent over here, right?
You know, let us not go there, but I'm just saying
exactly. Yeah, exactly. I do want this to be luckily we can edit things, you know, in and out, you know, as they come along, which is great. We're not live, but that's, you know, the point being is that I think the argument that we hear is that, well, COVID is affecting us right now. It's killing people right now, right? So the pros outweigh the cons on why we should be, you know, testing this on pregnant women and on children and everything else that's going on, you know, as opposed to cannabis. Well, this is just, and you already mentioned earlier, right, that there is a, you know, big stigma against cannabis in terms of not even wanting research to be done there, right? You know, the powers that be, so to speak, and who funds these studies and why they're getting funded. And there's no money there, right? There's big money, obviously, we've seen in vaccines and in COVID and everything. And there's no money in cannabis. What money is there to be made there? In fact, it's going to take away money from their pockets. So, you know, it's
right. One thing I didn't bring up about the research is that there was also such a thing as publication bias. You know, Melanie Dreher did the first and only prospective study on cannabis and pregnancy in Jamaican women. And it took her about 4 years to get that study published. And when she tried to get more money to repeat it because she got positive results, they wouldn't give her any money. You know, the NIH told her, if we give you more money to show that cannabis is okay, we will lose our funding. So there's such a thing as publication bias, that anything about cannabis that's positive rarely ever got publicized before the last few years. It's always been negative stuff that gets published because that's how the NIH got their money, or NIDA got their money, the National Institute for Drug Abuse. So they didn't want to lose their funding. So yeah, there's such a thing as, you know, publication bias, that keeps things from getting publicized or published. And that's why we have such a negative view of cannabis, because of the powers that be are trying to keep the stigma going, keep frightening people. I mean, as we get closer to legalization, I'm seeing a plethora of studies coming out about the dangers of cannabis in pregnancy and the dangers in cannabis in young people. Is like is just an explosion of these negative studies. And they're still looking at, they're still doing self-report, people's recollection of how much cannabis they use. They're still not testing what they're using. So it's still more of the same bad research going on right now, with just a few positives here.
So yeah, I guess on that note, you know, in terms of pregnancy and lack of research, right, I think that's kind of, you know, a huge, huge problem that we have. I mean, what has been obviously we don't just go off of experience in that regard, but what has been your experience with people who have used, you know, cannabis during pregnancy? And I guess it's a much larger question than that, because earlier you were talking about the toxins, the metals, the pesticides, all the different things in cannabis. And we're not really talking about even the cannabinoids yet, right? We're not talking about THC, the effect, right? What about CBD? What about CBG, CBN? All the other, you know, 170 plus cannabinoids and how they affect it, right? So when we talk about sometimes the effects it has on children, is it just THC that we're looking at? Is it the other ones, you know, CBD? What kind of effect do these all have? And what have you seen about that? And what's your experience with that?
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition. Laptop.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
Well, that's another problem with the research. A lot of the research is just looking at THC, which is one of, depending on who you talk to, 140 to 190 cannabinoids in the plant. That's just one. They are assuming that that is the most important cannabinoid because it causes intoxication, I guess, is why they're saying it is the active ingredient, but that's part of the reductionist conventional medicine model where you try to reduce everything down to a silver bullet or the active ingredient when plants have multiple components that work together to provide benefit. That is another part of the research. It's like they're pulling out the THC, and by itself, it may cause some problems or it may do some things that it wouldn't do when it's left inside the whole plant, when the other plants are with it. Like we know that, for example, THC can make your heart rate go up because it relaxes your smooth muscle around your blood vessels, makes your blood pressure drop. So your body's response to that is to make the heart go faster. We know that THC can cause intoxication or impairment, but when it's combined with CBD, as it is in the plant, you have less of intoxication. You have less of the hemodynamic effect. And so I believe that part of the research is a lot of the research is not reflective of what people are doing, because people don't just consume THC unless you're trying to just get a high THC and nothing else in it. But
well, nowadays people are focused on, you know, this 60-70%.
They are, but that's
ridiculous to me. To me, anyways. I mean, I guess I'm an old head now at 35. You know, but I like it with a nice balance of terpenes and cannabinoids and everything like that, and not just like how high can I get for the next 15 minutes, you know, kind of thing. So,
yeah. So I think that people are going to get the best experience and probably the safest experience in pregnancy when they're using an organic or something equivalent to an organic source of cannabis and a full spectrum. It's important for the cannabis or CBD to be organic because hemp and cannabis are bioaccumulators. They suck in toxins from the environment, from the air, from the water, radiation. I mean, you know, hemp was planted at Chernobyl to suck up the radiation because it's a bioaccumulator. So you don't want to use cannabis and hemp as medicine unless it's a clean organic source, in my opinion, because you're going to be taken in possibly of a toxin. So for pregnant women, I always recommend let me back up to the beginning. You know, clearly for pregnant women, and even the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have acknowledged the impact of environmental toxins on our health. And they're even recommending that pregnant women or women who think they're going to be pregnant should detox before they even become pregnant. That's how important the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have noted that environmental toxins really play a role on our health. So number one, you know, anybody thinking about getting pregnant should try to detox before they become pregnant. That means not only what you're eating, but all of the things you're putting on your skin, the makeup, you know, the personal skin products, the household cleaning products, all of that stuff, you really need to take another look at. Once you become pregnant, it is important to breathe clean air, drink clean water. If you can afford it, organic food. If you can't, then at least avoid the Dirty Dozen, which is what, you know, the 12 fruits and vegetables that are the highest in toxins and pesticides. And the Environmental Working Group has a wonderful website that people can look up those foods and stay away from them. And there's lots of botanicals around that can help with sleep and anxiety and nausea, cleaning up the diet can help in 90% of the cases of nausea and vomiting. And that's probably one of the most common reasons that women who are pregnant use cannabis is nausea and vomiting. But they found that the rates of nausea and vomiting are definitely highest in countries that have a diet high in sugar, processed foods, artificial flavorings, whatever. So if cleaning up the diet will clear up 90% of those symptoms. So, you know, clean air, water, food, sleep, as in 7 to 9 hours a night, and botanicals like, you know, chamomile, lavender tea, those kind of things can help with nausea and vomiting, trouble sleeping, anxiety, all that, you know. And if you've tried all of that and none of that works, then I would say add an organic full spectrum cannabis or CBD product and take it into your body either orally or topically, or if you want to bring it in through your lungs, use an electronic vaporizer or inhaler. There are some lucky states in the country that have access to cannabis inhalers. So, you know, that is what I would recommend for risk reduction for those who wish to use cannabis in pregnancy. And I would also go as far as saying a more like a 1-to-1 ratio of THC to CBD, because, you know, our ancestors use cannabis that really had only about 2 to 4% THC. So if you're trying to stay safe and do what your ancestors did, that is what I would recommend to people who are trying to use cannabis in pregnancy.
Wow, that was packed. That was incredible. That was Dr. Felicia. Thank you so much for dropping all that, you know, just in terms of, right, like before you're pregnant, while you're pregnant, prenatal, this, how to really detox, what it is. And it's so valuable, such valuable information, 30 years of your own experience and obviously backed by research and everything like that, you know. But yeah, you know, like you said as well, doing what our ancestors have done, right, as opposed to this Frankenstein thing that we've got going on here in the cannabis industry, you know, where we just do it and do it for the sake of profit. And that's what we do on one side of our mouth. The other side of our mouth, we, you know, talk crap on pharmaceuticals and how they're just doing stuff for profit. And in the meanwhile, right, you know, there's patients, there's people who really need access. And as you mentioned, there's not a lack of products. There's not a lack of options. There's a lack of access, right? There's a lack of people not being able to get those inhalers, right? Those cannabis inhalers. There's, you know, and having to find, you know, black, you know, legacy market products, so to speak, right? And whatever else there is going on there. And we have a lot of issues going on here, you know, in the industry. You know, we love it. We're grateful. We're grateful for the progress. We're grateful to see changes being made and to be on kind of those front lines, so to speak, of that progress. And I know you are for sure. And at the same time, to be honest with ourselves and to self-regulate ourselves and to not, you know, need necessarily government agencies who definitely don't have the industry's best interest and definitely have shown to not have the patient's best interest either. Right. You know, so a lot of stuff packed in there as well. And, you know, I think, you know, we've talked, you know, about the research on pregnancies, on, we talked about, you know, women's health a bit here. And we talked about how, you know, you yourself, you know, offering educational consultations, individuals, companies, you know, everything like that. And you know, even talked about, you know, people who have served veterans and kind of the effects that they've had as well. One thing we haven't talked that much about is Plants for Life, right? So talk about, you know, what is Plants for Life? How does that differ from what you're doing in your educational consultations and that kind of stuff? And what's the goal of Plants for Life? And, you know, what's going on with that?
Well, Plants for Life is relatively new. I launched it along with my two co-partners, Marilyn Pierce. She's a registered nurse and cannabis advocate, and Oski Chevanier, who is a Jamaican herbalist, who's very much into not only cannabis, but psychedelics, as well as other plant botanicals. And we launched this educational platform to just help people get more comfortable with using a plant-based lifestyle, including cannabis and hemp. So we're in our early stages. We're in the process of putting together a book based on our masterclass and working on that right now. But that's mainly we're educational outreach kind of company, still up and coming, pretty much considered the startup at this point. Yeah.
Very cool. I love that. You know, and there's a lot of, there's, you know, seems to be a lot of these educational kind of platforms and everything like that popping up in different areas. They don't always come with Dr. Felicia, right? You know, as a 30 years OBGYN, everything like that. And the whole holistic wellness and, you know, spiritual and everything aspect that you bring into what you do, right? I guess, what else besides that, you know, kind of, I know it's so early in the process and like that, excited to see how you guys develop plans for life and everything like that. But what else, I guess, separates you guys from maybe any other educational platform that, you know, is trying to make a change in cannabis? And what are you guys trying to do differently from what you've seen already?
Well, we each bring unique viewpoints to the table. Myself, as someone who's been in medicine for decades, who has one foot in the conventional world and another foot in the holistic world, integrative medicine world, functional medicine world. Also, having been out of private practice for a few years and gotten off of the hamster wheel, I can see the infiltration of corporate America into medicine, and it's heartbreaking. And I can see that a lot better than the average physician who's still on the hamster wheel. Marilyn Pierce is a registered nurse with IT background and very much a cannabis advocate. And nurses bring a whole nother side to the equation because they pretty much help people to stay alive when doctors drop the ball. They're at the bedside seeing things that doctors may not see because we're, you know, swooping in, swooping out with our, you know, on our rounds and going back to surgery, going back to office. But nurses are at the bedside and have a better feel for what's going on with the patient. So she brings that to the table. Oski is not only a Jamaican herbalist, he's a cannabis warrior. He's actually been in prison for dealing with cannabis on the other side of the law. So he knows what it's like to be a victim of the prison industrial complex. He also brings the rich tradition of cannabis from his Jamaican relatives and ancestors to the table. So we have a very interesting flavor put together to offer the people.
Amazing, amazing. And like I said, definitely excited to see everything and how it develops, I guess, you know, as well on that, in that regard. You know, what's kind of big, your biggest obstacle so far, you know, in terms of getting it off the ground or bringing awareness to it, or, you know, you're still, like you said, at those baby stages. So maybe hard to say, right? These kind of obstacles change on the daily, sometimes at the moment, right? You know, kind of what, when they're at these baby stages a little bit. So I guess with the eye on the future a little bit, you know, and kind of your experience so far, what's kind of been the biggest obstacle so far?
Well, the pandemic has definitely put a big slowdown on things in terms of in-person events. Also, you know, trying to work on your project that you love while trying to keep the lights on. You know, it's like, you know, I have to work a little bit just to keep a roof over my head. But it's been a pleasure getting to know the veterans and that kind of thing. So I would say just trying to find the time, being consistent, has been probably the biggest obstacle, because you got your other side gigs to keep the lights on while you're trying to work on your baby. So it's probably a matter of time and consistency. And the pandemic has put a big damper on things, but we're chucking away a little bit, piece by piece.
Love it. Love it. And you're 100% right, you know, in these endeavors and young, and, you know, you're obviously experienced, accomplished woman, doctor, individual person, everything. And it's still, is the same thing, right? You know, having to maintain that A job and that B job while, you know, and keeping the lights on, like you said, while, you know, helping this this baby grow and putting energy and time into it and making sure things get done correct. And right, as you mentioned, you know, the pandemic definitely threw a lot of things off for everybody, right? For most people. And we're all, everybody's here chugging along, you know, little by little. So appreciate you sharing that for sure. Now, you know, as we start to wrap up here, you know, I always have to ask everybody's my favorite question, and really excited to hear what you have to say, Dr. Felicia, you know, in terms of success, right? How do you define success? You know, whether it be professionally, personally, spiritually, what does success look like for Dr. Felicia?
Success for me is adding something to the world, leaving something of benefit to the world, giving hope to people who are suffering. In addition, success, in my opinion, means being able to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, with whom you want to do it, as long as you're not hurting anyone. That's the ultimate formula for success. But, you know, I'm very much service oriented, and I get pleasure out of helping people. And that has, you know, been part of this, just my way of life all the time, is to do service and help people feel better, give them hope. And typically, if you can give someone hope, that's the most important thing you can do, because if they have hope, then anything is possible.
Oh, that is so important. So important, you know, especially coming from a doctor, right? You know, there's so many stories and experiences of people, you know, being with brilliant doctors, having a brilliant doctor, you know, who really knows their shit, really on top, you know, but they just have horrible bedside manner, right? And just like doesn't know how to break the news and destroys people's hope and everything like that, because they just want to be realistic and forthcoming and everything like that. But it's so important, right? The human spirit, I think that that's the variable that's taken out so often, in especially in this research that's being done, right? How can you measure that? And it's just something that we try and, you know, we can't separate science from the human experience, so to speak, you know? And I think that's something that we try and do, and to make it nice and clean and put it in the cubby and presentable, but it's just not, you know, there's so many that variable comes into play. So I really appreciate that, as well as, you know, what you said about leaving something, you know, that's makes an impact on the world, right? You know, makes a dent on the world, and being able to experience how this human experience is as we see fit, as long as we're not hurting people, right? So I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. Definitely. Now, you know, as we close, I've really enjoyed this talk and want to learn, you know, more about Plans for Life as you're moving forward and everything like that. But, you know, how can listeners find out more about Plans for Life? How can they connect with you, you know, get consultations from you and everything else that goes on?
Well, plansforlife.com is our website, and life is spelled L-Y-F-E. So a little play on the words there.
Oh, nice.
And mine's life, L-Y-F-E. And my website, drfelicia.com, my first name is spelled with two E. So, and doctor is spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R, and F is in fish, E-L-E-C-I-A.com, is where you can find me. And you can, I have plenty of information on the website, plenty of blogs, podcasts, interviews. So it's a lot of information about cannabis and CBD on my website, and I'm available, you know, for online consultations. So drfelicia.com and plansforlife.com are how you can find us.
Wonderful. And everybody, wherever you're listening to, you can check out those notes or check out those links there in the notes, wherever you listen to, whether it be on the website or in any platform, podcast platform you see there. So check out Dr. Felicia Dawson. She's awesome, obviously. Really grateful to have her on today, and really grateful for you, wherever you're listening to, for listening as well. Appreciate you. So, Doctor, thank you so much for jumping on with us today, and good luck to you the rest of the year and beyond.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calacan.com. That's grow@calacan.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.